Trade Talk is back. Man, it is great to be back. There has been all kinds of rumblings going on in the market, specifically coming out of China. Loving this next episode we're about to share with you. Obviously, I have, from the description you already know, I have Charlie from Gembot.io back, the Bad Bear of Auckland. We have a funny nickname that we have due to some NFTs that Charlie was, you know, active in. But let's get to the real point here. From the prior two episodes that we were talking about, we especially from my unwind, just a rewind episode where we had some conversation about China, then Charlie speaking about what he was looking at from a new growth cycle, or rather just a new growth bubble that is taking place in some of these markets. Charlie was speaking a lot about China, and I had some detractions because, you know, I thoroughly got my ass kicked in China, and I guess I'm a glutton for punishment because I'm definitely willing to listen to what Charlie has to say because I find him to be one of the four leading minds in not only finding undervalued Chinese stocks right before they pop, but also being able to analyze them and having, you know, a really objective opinion. So, you know, without further ado, Charlie is here, and, you know, I want him to just give me what he thinks is going on in China, and especially these tickers, because the tickers are the best part. Charlie, how are you?
Yeah, great to be back. Great to be back once again. And talking about one of my favorite topics at the moment, or for the last while, which has been China. Obviously China has been unfavored by most and considered uninvestable by large swaths of the investment community, and that to me always gets me interesting when someone says something is uninvestable, because that to me says that people are too scared to tread in those waters, and that's where value can be found. So you know, I've been really interested in Chinese equities for a while. I've just seen them get more and more undervalued, you know, a lot of them kind of having kind of market caps of one third of their cash balance, and growing significantly, so, and having good business fundamentals. A lot of them are profitable, so yeah, I mean, I've been interested for a while, been basically building positions, especially over these last couple of months. And that last flush that we had just over a week ago, to me was the, potentially the hallmark sign of the end of a negative reflexivity cycle.
Wow. You know, so I see where you're coming from here, and I got to play devil's advocate, man, because the biggest detractor that people say is that there's so much market manipulation in China, specifically just in the stock market. Remember from Luckin Coffee, then affecting ADRs in the U.S. And even furthermore, the property market and the lenders in the property market. Sorry, not lenders, developers in the property market. I mean, what do you have to, you know, how do you defend that, though? That's the thing. How do you defend that?
Well, I mean, that's the great thing about it, right, is that you know, bad actors have been found, and generally bad actors get found out relatively quickly. You know, there are significant risks that we'll discuss in this podcast about China, for example, ADR delistings, and there will be delistings. But guess what? The ones that don't get delisted, the ones that have decent accounting standards, and the ones that regularly comply and report as they need to the US regulators will eventually find a bid. And they already have started to find a bid. So, you know, delisting is, to me, the biggest risk here for the Chinese names that I hold. I suspect that you won't see everything get, well, I don't see a world where everything gets delisted. That is obviously a possibility, but you know, there is a chance that one or two of my names get delisted. I guess that is a risk, but that's a risk I'm willing to take. Because when you're looking at something that you could credibly see, kind of you're getting it 10 cents on the dollar, then I'm willing to take that risk of delisting, knowing the fact that I could, and some of these names, get a 10-bagger.
Indeed. You're right. I mean, and I think that's the price discovery, not even price discovery, arbitrage discovery, all kinds of discovery that people are, turning a blind eye to. But, the reason why I say it makes me cautious because some of the smart money is looking that way. I mean, you can take the 10 baggers, and for those who are not understanding, because we have our own jargon sometimes, but meaning 10x return on your money. But you go right back into another situation of yuan manipulation. So, just like we play with our interest rates here to make our dollar stronger, constantly devaluing the yuan over there, as we said in our prior podcast episodes, reinflating the economy. How do you put that into play when you look at your thesis?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. I think we have to bear in mind that pretty much every government in the world right now is addicted to cheap money and has a real spe every government has a real spending problem. What I liked about China is that they popped their bubble, 9 months ago. They did a controlled demolition of their equities markets just before the Evergrande stuff started to unfold. Now you've got the Evergrande stuff that's also unfolding and coming to a head. Eventually that will get resolved, like most restructurings do, especially in a place where they're incentivized to keep the train on the tracks. Like any government, of course, they will backstop where they need to. Now I don't personally look at the real estate piece in China because I do think that they had a huge bubble, and that was kind of a part of my bullish thesis on the equities, is that the equities were so undervalued relative to, stuff like the real estate market, that there was a real opportunity there. And there's manipulation, currency manipulation, and manipulation through government intervention all over the world. It's nothing new, and I think that actually at the moment China have a very stable government, well, a very stable situation going into 2022 and 2023. Obviously there are some issues around sanctions and such, but what I found quite interesting recently is, despite all the bad news, the good news is outweighing the bad news. And it's not like the good news has changed. This is the same good news we heard 6 months ago. The difference is that at the end of a negative reflexivity cycle, you see that the good news starts to reinforce more good news, and it starts to stick. And the bad news, what you find is there's a diminishing return. There's a numbing effect. The bad news hits. Yes, you might see a little dip, but the bid comes right back in. And that's kind of been the real difference with this last couple of weeks, is that there's been a shift in sentiment, it seems.
Okay, so, and I remember when we were having these conversations about, names like Baba, some other tickers, but when I look at those things, and just like you're saying, in these past few weeks, the other thing I started thinking about is the Chinese are kind of sniffing around Russia. Remember when we were looking for, was it called UnionPay, or there was some pay, some pay. So, okay, it was UnionPay, and trying to see if we could get any pieces of it, though it was trading in the Hong Kong market. No, it was the Shanghai
Shenzhen.
market, Shenzhen market. Trying to see if we could get a piece because obviously they were going to be the payment processor in Russia. Are you not afraid of potential US sanctions?
Well, it's a really interesting one. I think strategically it'd be a horrible move to sanction China right now. I mean, you've just sanctioned 10% of the world, of GDP, If you sanction China, you're going to really hurt America. You're going to hurt, Apple has 19% of its revenue come through China. Tesla has a massive fucking manufacturing facility in China that would be taken hostage. And then, of course, you've got to bear in mind the US needs people to service its debt. How can the US service its debt if it sanctions half the world? And then, other countries are going to get desperate and they're going to need that oil and gas. They're going to need that breadbasket. They're going to need that fertilizer. And what's going to happen? They're going to have to start changing the rules on what they and moving away from the moral kind of decision making framework, because there's another moral imperative, right? When half of your population's starving because you can't get the food you need into the country that and you're not a tier one country, what are you going to do? You're going to have to work with you might have to work with Russia. So from a sanctions perspective, it's an again that's another risk. And I do think that if there's sanctions, it massively increases the chances of World War III. And if we get to a World War III status, I think we've got bigger issues to worry about than our portfolio value.
I would agree. I would agree. I hate to laugh at that comment, but it's true because so quickly does everyone want to run to the doomsday, ideology, like we always talk about tinfoil hats. But it is a valid, it's a valid, I guess you could say, you counter to your bullishness. But I think of all these things, it's the most far-fetched, and I bet I do. I like where you're coming from, and it's got me excited to get back in. I definitely got kicked in the teeth last go round because I couldn't see that part of China. Let me ask you, what when you start looking at China and evaluating what tickers you want, are you keeping up with the day-to-day news? Because I feel like last time around, what I missed is that I wasn't just keeping up to the day-to-day news so quickly. I was like 2 days later after I found out they, started deleveraging the economy, and they did it pretty quick.
Well, they went in with the regulations. And the regulations, the reason everyone got hit so hard on the regulations was that it seemed like such a shock. It's like Wall Street had no idea about it, right? So that took everyone by surprise. And in a sense, it was good because it's not like a few people got away as winners. Pretty much everyone got humbled, right? And then in that situation, you know what? The cool thing is that's when I started looking at China. So the exposure was real low, and it just meant that I was able to get stuff that I thought was cheap, like even cheaper. But I just waited on the sideline, waited on the sideline, had a nibble on the really bad days, and got more aggressive as time went on. Now I look at the news, but ultimately I'm also just looking at the businesses that I hold. And I'm like, is this what does the business look like? Is it going to still grow? Does it rely on America? No, or yes, fine. But is it going to grow? And is it profitable? Do they operate in line with the government's objectives? That's always a helpful one.
Very much so.
And can they thrive in a in in the in a in the kind of world that we've and if it passes a bunch of those, if it has a shit ton of if it has more cash than the market cap, I'm interested, especially if it's profitable and growing. And yeah, I just look I, you know for the, and then I like to take an approach of picking up a bunch of names of companies that I think are, minimum 3 to 4x in the next couple of years, but potentially 10x. And I look at industries that I know and I understand, And I can see there being a market for, and then I just go from there.
So in the Chinese cycle of things, you feel like a lot of these names are a longer term hold. Like, and when I say a longer term hold, meaning like you're going to hold them probably through the year, or is it where, you know, you're just looking for some pops in the names to sell them, and, you know.
Look, if there's a decent pop, I'll take. It's hard to say. It depends on the name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm here for a good time, not a long time with China. And, you know, I will position appropriately. Because, yeah, like, you know, I guess it would come down to how comfortable I felt with the amount of the portfolio value was in China. So we have some internal rules around that that we just adhere to. I know that we're going to end up coming close to those rules really quickly, obviously, as the value of these positions grow. And then I'll just place some defensive stops, you know. So once we get to a certain point with the name, put in some defensive stops. And, you know, if they get hit, they get hit. If they don't get hit, I just keep moving it up. And I'll just keep, and then once it eventually gets hit, I'm out the name. I won't think about it ever again. Unless it comes out up on the radar or as a 10 cent on the dollar again kind of thing.
I agree with that. So what are the tickers that you're looking at? I mean, you can go through whichever ones that you want, whatever you like, but I definitely want to get a nice focus on that. Because, you know, like you were saying, you were finding these value opportunities. Please share.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, none of this is advice, but just some of the companies that I found quite interesting. I'll go by the biggest cap first. I like Baidu, and I like Baidu because of their autonomous vehicle program and their AI, all the AI programs that they have around their business. Obviously, a lot amongst, you know, all the existing kind of business lines they already have that are successful and substantial. But I really like the autonomous taxi network they're going for. And out of the big tech companies, they seem to be most... Yeah, so I'm pretty interested in Baidu. And then in terms of some of the kind of companies with really good cash positions, I would say that Douyu, a gaming company, has about, I think it has like three to four times, sorry, it has, yeah, it's, it has three or four times its, no, sorry, let me just look at this. It's two times now, the cash over the market cap.
What's that Douyu sticker?
Douyu.
Thank you.
And then GSMG and MKD. GSMG is an online retail and social shopping platform, an app. They're doing a lot to create more fair competition in China. And I think that some of the smaller names are kind of interesting. They have good growth. And, you know, once they get out of their kind of recession kind of period, that company will continue to grow, but it could start to grow quite substantially. MKD is another small mini, like small cap company that is an online e-commerce marketplace for the chemical supply chain. And I think that's very interesting. And then you've got VIOT, which is an Internet of Things company. And I believe that once the supply chain issues are sorted, they will continue to grow. And then you've got, I mean, I've got a bunch of names, but just two more would be KC, which is King's Croft, I think, is their company name. And they're a cloud infrastructure play. So, you know, they provide cloud services essentially, and obviously we know that
competitor to Amazon, yeah.
Essentially, yeah. Then they do a bunch of other services alongside that, so they're growing. They do insane revenues, and then the very hated, but I got very very cheap, online educational company COE, And they're an online education company that has exposure not just in China, but also in the Philippines. And
Nice.
they have some operations in the unregulated part of the online education space. Great growth, highly profitable. At the end of the day, every ambitious company need to have strong education. Okay, that's a leading that's a key indicator for a successful company. Not company, country is their education. So
Sure.
anything that furthers education is a positive. Now, that became a bubble very, very quickly last time, and it got absolutely popped in a
It
in
got
a.
us. I agree.
But I mean, geez, I mean, to get into that at these levels, super interesting, super interesting.
And we still have the
So
initiative by the Chinese government for education, less video games.
yeah, so obviously we have got a little bit of exposure to video games through DouYu. Yeah, you got to be careful. I think that if you want to be extra conservative in China, you go and just avoid anything that the government hates. I've been a little bit.
Well, and you can still be aggressive, in my opinion, because you still have a situation where institutions are looking for yield in emerging markets, and if that's the case, they're going to pick some of these names that have that growth or those that those cash positions, because it's not just only doing business in China only. I'm sure it's doing business throughout Asia as a whole, right? Like a
Yep,
Douyu and yeah, so.
DouYu, for example, has a real big presence in Japan.
There you go.
So
Like the gaming
you're very,
capital of the world, pretty much.
yeah. So, you've got, you've got that kind of aspect of it, and that's a very good point. And the cool thing is if the ADR situation gets conclusively solved, then all of a sudden, you've got all the ETFs buying back into the ADRs. You it's not like you, it, you, you'll miss, like these things will double. You know what I mean? Like trying to, I mean, we saw it the other day. You saw it the other day, and I got up in the morning and we talked about it. I mean, how do you get in on that move when you get a 75% move in KC in one day without being in it before that move?
It's not
You
possible,
know, you
and
just.
I think, no, sorry, not to cut you off. I'm just saying, I think some of that discovery there has to do with, you have to beat the U.S. market to, or the you a lot of the U.S. investors and institutions to what is going to be inevitable of what is, what they're going to have to pick. They're going to have to go right back looking in emerging markets for yield, because though I know the interest rates will go up, hopefully giving better yields on some things, but the deflation of our markets and just pretty much the fact that you would be looking for other places to get a quick and fast return while our stock market's on the down, probably going back to China to some of these names. No one, we don't have emotions towards this stuff. Sometimes you lose, but it doesn't mean you lose forever. So
I mean, since last year, I was like net short the US and long China, and I'm up 13% year to date, right? So, like, and I've been buying US growth, now it's in the toilet because no one wants it. I like to buy things that no one want. For a long time, no one wanted China. For a little bit longer, people won't want China, but eventually people are gonna be forced to buy China because the ADR delistings won't ha may not happen, and if they don't happen, lots of funds have to buy it again.
Oh, they're gonna look for the yield,
And then people are fickle. They'll be going back there chasing the greed. These things will go. These pr things will probably overshoot. I'll be able to sell out, and then the next news cycle, negative news cycle, will come in, and I might be able to rebuy if they get cheap again. So, these same cycles happen over and over again in the market. So I'm looking to buy stuff that no one wants, and when everyone wants it, I'm already out.
Unwind or rewind, like we said in the other episode. Man, Charlie, I appreciate you so much. A lot of people may not even know this, but we have two really killer episodes coming in the future. And I know it's stuff that most people aren't even looking at. Remember, we were talking about shorting growth in the UK as well as the adjustable rate mortgages in Australia and New Zealand. I just
And
know.
Canada, and
Oh, in
Canada.
Canada, I just know we're ahead of the market on that. So once we, continue to get our research together, I can't wait to share that with the audience. But man, I just appreciate you for, just lending your expertise, because I know you've done a lot of work on these Chinese names. Hell, there's still more names that you didn't even talk about. So I know you're really deep in China, and I'm really happy to take another swing at this. So just to unanimously even say it on my podcast, like I'm going back into China. I made a bit of a blurb about it, but I wanted you to share, your firm opinions on it. And I definitely agree with you. I think it's time to, beat them this time to the cycle. So when the rest of the market starts getting overwhelmed.
And it's not for the faint-hearted, and it's not about going all in on China. You can't be all in on China. You got to be responsible with your capital. You got to protect your capital while taking your calculated risks. So that's what we'll do. That's how we'll play it, and we'll make sure that we're always protected and protecting our portfolio.
Awesome, man. Thank you again, Charlie. Again, Charlie Needham from Gembot.io. Check him out.
That gembot.ai, gembot.ai.
Dot AI. My
Thank
apologies.
you. No problem.
I'm going to put the Twitter on there. Check him out. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate you.
Thanks,
Till
team.
next
Peace.
time. Take care, guys. Bye.